Welcome to the Amazon Legends Podcast, where we have real stories about making it big on Amazon. Our guests are CEOs of large companies and entrepreneurs who became powerful sellers, also experts specializing in helping sellers, and both former and current Amazon employees who will give us an insight from behind the scenes. Here's your host, Nick Urison.
Welcome to another episode of Amazon Legends. My guest today is someone who got into the Amazon space right out of college. So he must have heard enough about it. So he decided this is where I want to be. But this is despite the fact that he got a degree in chemical engineering. So did his master's and then decided to be in Amazon. So see what the chemistry is like in the Amazon space. And then right after that, he built up to $100 million in revenues across a handful of brands in home and kitchen category. That happens to be his specialty. And he's currently the category manager for home and kitchen at Branded. And Branded is an aggregator. And outside work, he's very passionate and competitive in golf. So with that, everybody, meet my guest, Tom Robinson. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Thanks so much, Nick. Great to be here.
Great to have you. So I'm dying to hear about, you know, how you connect chemistry to Amazon, but that's going to come later. So tell me, you know, aggregators, I know you guys are doing a lot of spending, you know, acquiring brands, and then suddenly, you know, the tide turned, right? So all the aggregators are now holding on to the brands that they already have. They slow down the acquisition, even though they are still going on. It's much, much more selective. That's my understanding. And as we record this in October of 2022. So, but what I know is, we have these conditions that we have right now with inflation being very high and e-commerce is slowing down compared to the COVID days since nobody's stuck at home anymore. So with the inflation being up, disposable income being lower than before, and the natural slowdown on e-commerce, aggregators are more focused on operational efficiency and profitability, and while driving growth. So this is at least my take. So my question to you is, what are you doing about driving growth despite these conditions, which is really what also sellers are trying to do, but for aggregators, there's a lot more at stake. So what are you doing to drive growth?
Yeah, I mean, we've still seen quite a lot of growth. And I think the two main points for me are staying ahead of the curve and prioritizing well.
So staying ahead of the curve, you know, it's always sometimes depending on how far ahead you are in the curve, right? Then you are all by yourself. But staying ahead of the curve is key. So give us what that means.
Yeah, so we always want to make sure that we're the first in the market to move, to utilize new things. Obviously, the landscape in Amazon is always changing, and the platform of Amazon is constantly changing. And we want to make sure that we're the first to try new things and utilize new tools.
So, okay, so you're talking about the new features that Amazon introduces, the new sets of data and things like that. Is that what you mean?
That's definitely one of the facets for sure. Yeah. So any of the new tools that they have, but as well as, you know, all of the existing things that have always been true, you know, advertising, PPC, other channels, things like that is definitely still a factor.
Okay. So for the listeners' benefit, I just want to make an announcement here for this episode. So what we're going to do in this episode is, as of October 2022, Everybody knows Amazon released a lot of new things in Seller Central for brands, sellers that are brand registered. We're going to dive into every single one of these, and we're going to hear directly from Tom what they are and how he's using them to drive growth. So, all right. So you take your pick. Pick the first one. Let's go.
The first one that dropped super recently, we started to roll out, I guess, would be an example of the A Plus Premium. So that one's a very new one that we've just started to roll out across, especially some of our top products, which I'm sure we'll get into more detail on the prioritizing point. But yeah, looking at the top products, and we're already looking at the different layouts of that and how we can best utilize that to improve the conversion rates of our listings.
So, okay. So you just said one of my favorite phrases, conversion rate, because that's what everything is about, right? So A plus content is one of the factors, major factors on a page that affects conversion rate. So for anybody listening, you want to increase your conversion rate, A plus pages are a big deal. So tell us what A plus premium is, which is the new one, and then how does one go about getting access to it?
So A plus premium is basically, it's a more interactive version of the A plus content. Obviously before it's just the product description on the page, then you have A plus where you can start to add much more branding and images and create more of a story there. And then A plus premium is they've given you a number of different layouts that you can use with a lot greater interaction. So, you know, you can flip between different slides. It's much more, I guess, user-friendly and a nicer way to display the information. You can show a lot more without it looking, you know, like a ton of text. You don't want it to be, you know, super bulked out with writing. Whereas now, because it has different panels that you can kind of slide between, it makes it a much, much cleaner layout for that can be helpful for customers. You know, you can answer more questions and really show off your unique selling points of your product.
And how does one go about getting that? Is that when I hear the word premium, usually it either costs money or it costs more. So is that one of those situations?
No, it actually isn't in this instance. So, I mean, you need the brand registry and things like that. So you need to have the trademark and brand registry, the same with the A plus content. But then for this, there's just a number of different criteria that you need to hit with Amazon. I don't know all of them off by heart. I was working with the account managers to basically make sure prior to it dropping that we had everything. You know, this is just an example of us trying to make sure that we're the first people in our categories to be able to use this. In the build up to it dropping, making sure, I mean, we did, you know, the different Amazon posts, we had to have it on all of the different brands in the account. And there were just a few criteria like that, with the account health and things like that you need to tick off. But if you have brand registry, there's no reason that you shouldn't be able to achieve it.
Okay. So for anybody listening, they need to check, first of all, A plus premium, right? That's key. And then they have to check the criteria to see if they meet the criteria or not.
Yeah. And then if they don't at that moment in time, then there's, you know, there's no barrier to being able to do it that I'm aware of. You would just need to, if you need to have more interaction on Amazon posts, you need to produce content, you know, those types of things. Amazon kind of incentivizing you to do some of the things that they like to see. Then you would need to do, you know, some of those things. But, you know, it would just be a case of checking, you know, anything that you haven't already done and looking to kind of get those ticked off.
Okay, so what I'm hearing from you is just based on what you just said on Amazon posts, the interaction. So for a brand new seller launching a brand new listing, they are launching their product page for the first time. It's a brand new ASIN. They're going to put up their A-plus page, but premium is not going to be available at that point because they haven't done anything yet, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the distinction. If you are new, then it's going to be a while before you can get the premium, but keep an eye on it. Make sure that you meet the criteria, and whatever the criteria is, do your interactions, post, whatever the case may be. And then as soon as it's open, then go for the premium, because that's going to give you a lot more.
Yeah.
So that's the lesson. All right. And you guys are working on it right now, I'm sure.
No, absolutely. Yeah, we've rolled it out for the first of our top products. And now it's a case of, you know, trying to optimize it, look at different options, you know, get any feedback that we can. And basically try and make it as good as we can.
Okay. So now I want to go back to the answer you gave at the beginning. The one was staying ahead of the curve, and the other is prioritizing. So in this case, how does prioritizing apply?
So in this specific example, it's really looking at our top products and trying to make sure that we're getting the most out of our hero products. So something that I'm always doing with my team is identifying what levers can give us the most amount of growth. Where can we best invest our time to really get the return on investment, you know, for that? And if we're able to improve the conversion rate of the listings of our top performers, then that can drive a much higher, you know, sales rate than, you know, massively improving the performance of a struggling listing. So while we always want to improve the performance of every listing we have, if we can do that on the top products, that's where we're going to see the greatest return for the work that we put in. So that's where we would prioritize first.
Okay. So that's such a good point. I actually do this with my clients. You know, we've got a platform that visualizes the data. And one of the things that I look at is the sales performance. So very often, I pull up that report, and what happens is, because it's all pictures, it's all stacked. So every single SKU is stacked. So what I see is they have like 20, 30 listings, and about 8 of them generate about 70% of the revenue.
Yeah.
And as yet, they are spending PPC ads, obviously working on content on all of them, trying to push revenue. So going back to the changes in Amazon, which are constant, right? Always something new. You cannot possibly put your time and energy and money into applying these changes to everything, because you have to keep testing, right?
Yeah.
So when you prioritize your top performing items, and then you say these are the ones, that also gives you a much, much easier operation, so to speak, for inventory management, because it's all about FBA, right? So you have to keep replenishing. You have to say, you know, which one is easier, staying on top of 20, 30 SKUs versus, you know, 5-6 SKUs. So, and then of course you up the revenue on those, then maybe you can negotiate better price. So everything kind of flows through from that. So that prioritization is, I can see how it plays into it. So of course, if you're going to build an A+ premium page, you have to pick your items, because it's SKU by SKU, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, just so many people fall into that trap, as you say. People always end up with, you know, quite a number of SKUs that they're trying to work on. And, you know, you can end up trying to work on and do bits of optimization for so many of them and really struggle to get anywhere. My main advice on that would be really to, you know, pick the top ones and really try and drill down on those, really try and optimize every part of those. And then, you know, when you feel like you're in a great place, okay, you can take the learnings that you have from that and try and apply it to other ones, you know, to try and make quick wins, things that, you know, won't take a lot of time to improve. But definitely trying to learn things when you're trying to balance it on 20, 30 SKUs is a very difficult thing to do.
Yeah. So there is also something very subtle that you kind of chose in your approach. And I want to shine the flashlight on it, so to speak. So when I ask you the changes in Amazon, and there are several, you picked A plus premium, and then you mentioned it increases the conversion rate. So, yeah. So that's what I'm getting at. So am I hearing from you that today, with everything being where it is with the conditions, you are more focused on increasing the conversion rate than increasing exposure for the listings?
It depends, I guess, what you mean by increasing the exposure for the listings. I mean, I've listened to you know, your podcast before. I know, obviously, the two key, I think you mentioned the magic bullets in the past, right, being the click-through rate and the conversion rate. And obviously, the more that I can get that listing seen, whether that be through ranking for specific keywords or through deals that Amazon put on. I mean, we've obviously last week, depending on when this obviously goes out, we've just had the first full Prime event, right? So, I mean, that's that was a huge factor for us, you know, trying to increase the exposure of the listing. So, I mean, they're both things that we're definitely looking at.
Yeah. Okay. So I, you know, it makes me very happy that somebody actually cites, you know, what I said in previous episodes. But you're right. I always say there are two magic bullets for success in Amazon, and they're kind of loaded bullets, so to speak. But the first one, the hardest one, is the increasing the click-through rate. So that means that somebody goes to Amazon, searches something, and then a bunch of search results come up. So how do you get more people to click on your listing? So that's the first one. So the higher the number, of course, the higher the number of people coming to your product page. So now they are your captive audience, so to speak. They're looking at your product page. So then the next magic bullet is, how do you get more of those people to actually make the purchase? So that's what I was getting at. So but my increasing exposure, you're right. As far as what am I trying to do here as a seller, under this current conditions, do I want to bring more and more traffic to my listings by either advertising externally or more keywords, more campaigns driving different things? So that's what I mean by increasing exposure versus look at what is already happening and try to increase conversion on that. That means could be increasing the click-through rate on the existing campaigns rather than adding more traffic, which would cost extra money. So that's what I was getting at.
Yeah, so I think in general, I would lean more towards the exposure. If I'm totally honest, I mean, if you're starting out and there's a lot of, you know, really low hanging fruit on the listing, you know, if it's a really poor listing and your conversion rate is terrible, then obviously it doesn't matter how many clicks you get to the listing if you're not getting people going through and buying. But under the assumption that, you know, your listing looks pretty good, pretty well put together, and you've kind of, you know, covered the basics of it, you're going to really struggle to move your conversion rate by double, right? You're going to struggle to double your conversion rate. You're going to struggle to move the needle on that by an awful lot. Whereas if you're able to improve your ranking for specific keywords, if you're able to utilize various different deals and things like that, then you absolutely can double the traffic to your listing. Less so externally. I mean, Amazon is pretty huge, and their marketing budget, I'm pretty sure, will outdo anyone else's marketing budget. So they're driving a lot of people to the platform. So, you know, unless you really do have a huge team and specific teams that are going to work on that, like the amount of people that come to Amazon for different keywords is just enormous. The amount that you'd be able to drive yourself is probably going to be minuscule as a comparison of that. So I wouldn't worry so much externally for the vast, you know, majority of cases, but certainly trying to make sure you're well positioned in those markets. Yeah, that would be my thing, because you can make huge changes there. Whereas the conversion rate, we're making tweaks. We're trying to get a couple of percent here and there, but you're going to struggle to you know, massively move that number.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is, don't worry about external traffic so much, because Amazon is already bringing people to the site. Try to capture more of those people by using different keywords, and then focus on getting more people to the product page.
Yeah,
and then whatever the conversion rate is on the product page, that's going to kind of take care of itself if you are bringing the right people to the page. That's what I'm hearing. Is that right?
Yeah, pretty much. I just think that you can more easily drive a lot more people to your page than you can massively improve your conversion rate. I think you'd be better spent trying to double the number of people that come to your page than you would be trying to double the conversion rate, unless your listing is really poor.
Yeah. Well, okay, I have a little bit of a different viewpoint on it, primarily because the differences in conversion rate on the page, they can be incremental, but they will have a huge impact if you are bringing a high amount of traffic. So I guess you know how it is. One size doesn't fit all. So if you are bringing yeah. a small amount of traffic, then your conversion rate can really go up and down, and then it's going to make a difference. But the difference in terms of number of orders may not be too much, but the percentage will vary. It will fluctuate up and down if your traffic is on the low side. But if your traffic is high and you are driving through different campaigns and for different keywords, and suddenly, you know, you're getting a lot of traffic, in that case, your conversion rate is not going to move too much. But yeah. those incremental changes may have a huge impact. I mean, you do the math. If you have 1,000 people landing on your page in a month, and then you go from 10% to 12%, so that 2%, you know, is going to give you the kind of extra number of orders. But if you're bringing 50,000 people, then even that 2% may have a huge number of orders, and then that goes straight yeah. to the bottom line, right? So how would you, I guess my question to you is this: what is a good number when you say, you know, I'm not going to worry too much about conversion in terms of traffic? How many unique sessions per month would be good enough to say, okay, from now on, it's not going to really matter too much?
Well, how many sessions would I need before I wasn't as worried about the conversion rate?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, honestly, I really wouldn't have a number for that. I don't honestly spend an awful lot of time looking at session numbers for the products. Definitely spend a lot more time looking at sales and the ranks and positions for keywords, if I'm honest.
I see. Okay, so you are focused on the rank, and if the rank is going up, and sales will automatically follow, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and then the rest will kind of work out. In my different kind of reviews, what I've seen is on monthly basis, I can't remember the number exactly, but it's usually around 20,000 visitors or so, you know, that's still on the low side. So once you go over 100,000 visitors to the page, it becomes hard to impact the conversion rate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So since we started with the changes on Amazon, give us what's the next change?
I mean, one that we're looking at the moment, I suppose, is the virtual bundles that we've been working with, and the different ways in which to utilize those, both as separate virtual bundles and also as variations within listings.
So tell us what virtual bundle is and how does one go about using it?
So a virtual bundle is, if you have two different products, instead of actually having to package them together and create a new, you know, listing where you would, you know, package them and obviously deliver them together, you're basically able to list them together within Amazon, so that people are able to buy a kind of, yeah, I guess like a joint pack. So an easy example would be if you were selling, you know, one product and you wanted to do a multi-pack version, you could do a virtual bundle where people can buy two together, but you don't actually need to package two together. Amazon will do that like for you. So you're able to create multi-packs, but you can also do it with different variations of products.
And how about the pricing of it?
Yeah, so you set the pricing of it. So in the same way that you would set it of a normal product, you can set the pricing.
Okay. So what you are doing is you're doing analysis ahead of time and you are saying, okay, I'm going to offer, let's say, a six-pack of the same item, and you assign a price and that becomes a virtual bundle. And then from that, Amazon and that listing will go up, right, as a on or either as a variation or as a standalone, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, and Amazon will assign an ASIN, but it doesn't actually the physically the product doesn't exist until an order is received. Is that right?
Yes, correct.
And when an order is received, Amazon will pull from inventory of whatever SKUs are involved, and then make up the bundle and send it out.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you have to figure out ahead of time what how much you're going to sell it for and also what kind of an FBA fee it's going to cost.
Yeah, I mean, the FBA fees will be for the individual products that are being sent. And, you know, we say ahead of time, you know, we're looking at products that we currently have in and looking at where we think it would make sense, running as always different tests. I mean, it's a great opportunity to test upselling. You know, you have the original product at a very nice price point to try and get people into the listing, and then trying to increase the value of that purchase, of that transaction, by trying to sell a two-pack, a three-pack, or whatever of that product. Yeah, it would be a good example.
So let me give you, I mean, I'm all for testing. So let me share with you what we have just discovered only last week with one of my clients. We are working on their listing. So they sell a small item, and the small item in FBA fee, not including the commission, just the FBA fee, was $3.92. So I suggested that they should create packs. So yeah, what we did, we created not virtual, but physical packs. So when we did our analysis and we studied it, three pack and a six pack in FBA fees went up to $5.80. Each one of them, three pack and six pack, both of them only cost $5.80. So now, for anybody listening, if you do virtual bundling in this case and you sell a three pack, you're going to pay, in my case, $3.92 times two, right, Tom?
Yes.
But if you do a physical bundle or a pack, you're going to pay $5.80.
Yeah.
So that's why I say I favor it for testing, but in the long run, anything that you tested with works out to be successful, then it's best to go to physical round, right?
No, 100%. Yeah, absolutely. You nailed it there with, you know, my advice for anyone with, you know, it's a great option to test. It's a great option to see if there is a demand for a certain type of thing, right? Maybe you're doing one, maybe you're not sure whether a six pack is too big. Does anyone want that? It's a great option to test it. And if the demand is there, then yeah, absolutely. I would try and switch to a physical, but it's a great option to get a bit of information before you send in a bunch of stock at this bigger pack size, the bigger size. Okay, you know, per unit, it's a lower fee. But then if there's no demand, you certainly don't want that sat around in Amazon. So yeah, no, I'd only really look to use it as a test in quite a lot of instances. But yeah, it's also a great tool.
Yeah, yeah. So that's something when we discovered that, I said, and also, by the way, what we did when we did this, we upped the price. We obviously doubled, let's say we're looking at, I believe we looked at 3-pack. So we tripled the price of a single and then discounted X percent and assigned as the selling price of the 3-pack and then calculated the FBA fee. The net profit on it was like sky high compared to the single one. So, yeah. So what we did as a strategy, and this is actually something I advocate. I tell everybody, you know, virtual or otherwise, at the end of the day, Amazon loves bundling or packs because they offer greater value. So I always tell people, by all means, offer the single item, but offer the packs, but offer discount with a coupon code on the pack SKUs, which becomes publicly displayed on the page where Amazon shows special promotion available, and Amazon buyers know that. So the coupon code will be displayed. So what happens is if somebody wants to buy the single, they can buy it, but no discount. But they are now encouraged to use the coupon code because on the packs or bundles, they'll get a better value and they'll get a discount. So, yeah. And the other reality is a good percentage of the people who say, oh, look, there is a discount on it. They forget the coupon code and they check out without even clicking.
No, I mean, 100 coupons, I think, they're not very new, but coupons are obviously a very powerful tool within Amazon for exactly that reason. I mean, it varies market to market, but you're usually looking at like a 50-60% sort of claim rate on the coupons that you have. So it looks very nice. It looks really nice on the detail page as well. And then you often find that, you know, your margin is a lot higher than just with using the coupon. But yeah, on your point about using packs, I mean, I would definitely advise people to, you know, depending on the markets that they're in, use them where possible, because you know, you really have a great opportunity, as you say, to have a really enticing smaller pack, have it a thin margin, great price. You can try and get really good ranks, really great, positioning. And then when people come in, as you say, when you do the calculations on the FBA fees, almost always you can have amazing, you know, margins at a competitive price with bigger packs. And once you've got people into the listings, it's then a no-brainer in lots of cases. Oh, well, I'll get this bigger pack. It's way less than twice the cost. And actually, you'll make a better margin on it as well. So looking at opportunities like that is great. And if people don't have a lot to invest initially and they're not sure whether it's going to be worth it, just using things like bundles to test the water is a great option.
Yeah. Now, one more thing for the listeners' benefit, since we are talking about packs and bundles that I want to spell out, which is a huge advantage. So what Amazon will do is, I'm sure that you're familiar, in the item record, it says number of pieces in the in whatever. So you plug in the number of pieces there. So in this case, let's say you're selling a 6-pack and then you'll put 6. So what Amazon will do is Amazon will take the item price, divide it by number of pieces in the item, and then display that in the search results page. So when somebody searches and all the search results come up, it's not only going to display the price of the item, but also underneath in brackets, it's going to say from blah, blah per unit.
Yeah.
So a lot of the Amazon buyers, I buy coffee, okay? So I buy K-cups. So when I go and I see these 48 pieces or 24 and whatever, I'm always looking at that unit price. So that unit price, the lower, the better. So when you create these bundles and packs, you're going to see that unit price, and that's going to be another one to increase my first magic bullet, although click-through rate. So that you bring more people. So that's another advantage. Okay, so we covered two so far. I want one more. So give me another one.
I mean, another really new one, which I would really advise people to dive into is the new, I'm not sure exactly the name of it. It's like the search query function within Seller Central. It's a new tool where you're able to get better information about your sales distribution between different keywords.
Mm-hmm. So that's, you're referring to search query performance.
Yes.
So in other words, you now have data on what search terms are successful when people search by those and then they click on them. So what's your click-through rate for each one of those search terms that you are actually advertising or organically, right?
Yeah, absolutely. In the past, it was really difficult, to try and really ascertain for some products like where exactly your sales were coming from. Obviously, you know the different keywords. There are tons of tools, to find the search volumes of the different keywords. But then to understand, I guess, the relevancy and exactly, what your click-through rate for the different keywords would be is difficult. And often we had to combine, PPC data alongside the kind of search volume data that we had to try and make, educated guesses about, okay, where do we think the sales distribution is coming from? Looking at the PPC performance for any that, trying to gauge whether they were relevant or not. But obviously that can be a bit skewed by the market and the competition. How high is the bid amount? What is it? Is it all going to impact your ACoS and your sort of performance? But now having this and being able to distinctly see, where are you performing well, is a great tool, because you can see maybe there are some longer tail keywords that you're actually performing well for, but you're not ranked that well. It's a great thing to indicate areas that you can look at and try and improve that and try and improve your organic visibility. It can also, give you an idea of where your most important keywords are to try and, in some ways build your listing around that to make sure you're optimized and to show you, I guess, where the most important areas are, where are your sales coming from, is always really important information to have. So yeah, that's been huge, because it just gives so much, it removes so much guesswork, I suppose, from where we were before, which was a lot of educated guessing, trying to pull bits in to get a picture for where the sales were coming from.
Yeah. So there is something that I heard a long time ago, and I kind of embraced it as the principle of it. I always tell people, Amazon is not a marketplace of products. It's a marketplace of keywords. So what you need to do is figure out a way to associate your product with the keywords. It's not the other way around. In other words, don't start with a product and then say, okay, I wonder what keywords. That's not the right way. It's the other way. So now with this search query performance data, you are able to do that. You are able to see what search terms are driving business to your listing. So you kind of mentioned it, but I always say this, there are three aspects of working with data. First of all, you want the data coming from multiple sources. Just looking at one thing, it's like listening to one person about, let's say, who to vote for, right?
Yeah.
You want a diverse group of people telling you different ways. The second thing is, looking at numbers alone is not enough. You need to visualize the data, because pictures worth thousand words. You can see trends and things like that. The third is the most important. Is you want to take that data and then turn it into some kind of an action. So what I want to know from you is, what are the actions associated with what the data shows, and what do you do, and when do you do it?
I mean, so this conversation could go on for a long time. looking at what actions we could pull from that data. I'll give, I guess, two kind of main ones that I would try and pull from it. So one is I would be looking at the SEO, right? I would be looking at where my sales are coming from and making sure that my listing is optimized around that. I mean, I totally agree. And both of my points are going to touch on it. You know, your point of it being a market of keywords. So for the keywords that I am getting maybe a good click-through rate, a good conversion rate, you know, for those keywords, simple, but like, do I have them in my title? Do I have them in my listing? Do I have that clearly shown? Am I even, you know, running ads to those keywords? So, you know, for some of your bigger keywords, like, it may seem really obvious, but I mean, you people can always get caught out with plurals of things. So it's always one thing to keep an eye on, but there could be other, you know, they have to be really long tail, but they could be slightly longer tail keywords. I mean, if you've done product research, you'd be amazed how many, you know, different keywords can kind of show fairly similar results, and you might not be aware of that. So one of those would, as you say, make sure the listing is built around it, make sure the SEO is optimized, just to make sure that, you know, any organic ranking just through natural sales that you're already getting, this isn't you putting in additional work to get those. This is just making sure that you're getting everything out of it that you kind of should be. So I definitely try and make sure that was optimized. And then also looking at, you know, new products or variations and things around your product line. If you can see that there are keywords around your product that maybe you aren't performing that well for, because something's not quite right. So maybe it's, you know, you're doing something, a product, and there's a color, you know, keyword attached to it, and things like that. It can give you other ideas for maybe areas where you're not performing that well. Maybe you were investing in it, and clearly it's not working that well, and you can kind of reassess that and look at, you know, maybe you want to do something else that would allow you to target that better. So I think it gives you a great idea of those types of things, of where you're performing well and where you're not, and as always, you know, where to really prioritize your time.
Yeah, I mean, this is so smart approach. Now that you have the data, so just do a pull the report, see where your sales are coming from, what keywords, make sure they are in your content, optimize your content is optimized for it, and then also run campaigns for those keywords, and focusing on long tail is always a good idea, because your bids will be probably much lower. And at the same time, you know for a fact that that's bringing you business, so why not increase your exposure for it, right? So
there's so much you can do, obviously, around broaden and phrase you know, things with PPC. And I mean, what a great place to be able to start from, to be able to put in some of those broaden phrase match on some of those keywords. And then, you know, as always with PPC, you're just optimizing and finding what's working, keep that going, and then cut the ones that aren't. And it's a brilliant place to start from. And yeah, something that is really great information to finally have.
Yeah. So tell me your take on something. So let's say that you're selling an item, it comes in different colors.
Yeah.
Putting the color in the title and then advertising it with that color being, you know, part of the long tail. Is that a good strategy?
I mean, definitely. I think it depends on the search volume around it. So I mean, as part of the product research, I'd definitely be, you know, researching the different colors. One, in terms of what's popular, you know, what the competition doing, what seems to be the best, running external tests on things like PicFu and things like that to try and understand what people like, but also massively looking at keywords, you know, looking at you know, what people actually are searching for and saying that they want. And if there are any color specific keywords, then yeah, absolutely. You know, you want to have that in your title and then, you know, run campaigns around that, just because, you know, that's going to make sure you're capitalizing the most on the traction that Amazon gives you for each of the sales to really make sure that you're ranking for those keywords.
As a general rule, would you recommend putting those variation specifics in the title?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's, you know, when you click on the, first of all, this is another interesting thing, but, you know, when you do a search you know, for a specific search term, a bunch of listings come up. The picture that is shown is for a variation.
Yeah.
And then when you click on it, you land on the product page and one of the variations is selected by default.
Yeah.
There is no control over them, right? Amazon decides yeah. based on what's performing the best, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, however, every variation has its own title, its own set of bullets, and you can have all that. And of course, pictures goes without saying. So it's something to keep in mind. So if you do your search query performance, you know, analysis, and then from that, you can derive a bunch of results that you can say, okay, this I'm going to put in my content, you know, the product page, and then these variations of this particular search term, I'll run PPC campaign. And in the process, you push your exposure up drastically, right?
Yeah, I mean, and as you say, it's important to remember that ranks are attached to the ASIN, right? So Amazon just shows the best ranked ASIN, and then all of the other ones are kind of hidden behind it. So there's no reason if you know you have the different colors that you would have if someone searches, you know, X product black, that your black one shows up. If they search X product pink, your pink one shows up, you know, because the ranks are attached to each individual ASIN. And why is that ever going to be a bad thing? You know, you want to have that. So by having the color in the title, by running the different ads that you have, you would want the most relevant product to be showing up, because that, as again, you know, is going to get you the best click-through rate. So I just don't really see why you wouldn't have that, because it's going to give you the best opportunity to do that. It's going to improve your visibility, which is just yeah. all good things.
Well, I can give you one scenario why you would not want Amazon to decide based on the numbers alone. When it's a fairly recent launch, because there are no real healthy numbers yet. I remember this. I had a client, they sold these cup holders for, it kept the coffee cup and the cell phone together. So yeah. that they were all together in a car, and they had different colors of it. They had blue, red, you name it. They had like six different colors. So we prepared the whole thing. The most popular one was black.
Yeah.
So guess what color Amazon was showing in the search results after the launch? Orange. So they said to me, we don't want to show the orange. We know the black sells. Can we say, I said, sorry, you know, you have no control over it.
No, so, I mean, yeah, you definitely end up with, when you have different ASINs start appearing for the keywords, it can then become very difficult to undo that, because if people click on the orange, even if some people do then buy the black, yeah. for some reason, Amazon doesn't just flip it back round. It takes through the clicks and the conversion, like, you know, for yeah. the orange. So it can be very hard to reverse it when the wrong ones start showing.
So it's a very minor. So I want to cover one more. I'm waiting to see if you're going to pick one of my favorites.
One more. I'm not sure. I guess probably.
I will tell you.
What?
Manage experiments.
Yeah.
So have you used it?
Yeah, you mean for like A/B testing of images and content and yes. things like that, yeah?
Yes.
Yes.
So
yes.
I'm starting to become a huge fan of it, because, as you know, one of the challenges is you're going to have a new listing, and even down the road, I mean, it doesn't matter. This is not like a one-time deal. So the product picture is key to getting more click-throughs and blah, blah. So what product picture do you work with? And you have this service we use, PeakFu. PeakFu is great.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's never really real. So going back to conversion. So conversion is impacted by the product picture, your bullets, your A-plus content, right? Those are key factors. And also your title is important for increasing the click-through on the search. So with managed experiments, now you can load up variations for each and every one of those. And Amazon will serve them up as and when. So you'll be doing your test real time, and it doesn't really do much for you as far as, like, you know, work that you have to put into it. You have to come up with variations. So I'm curious to see if you've used it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Honestly, use it all the time. It's, you mentioned, I mean, I already mentioned it briefly earlier in the call, you know, PeakFu is a great tool for trying to find things out and whittle down ideas, but it's not Amazon data. And the landscape is not the same. The people selecting it are not the same as ordinary customers, right? You know, they're almost looking for a reason to pick one over the other, as opposed to just picking, you know, which one they like. So the only, this, you know, really the only tool you have to get genuine Amazon data. So you can do all of the work in the world to try and find it out. But, you know, it's so important to give you an idea of, you know, what is more popular, as you say. I mean, the main images, I can't speak highly enough of, you know, how important that is. I really think it's just one of, if not the most important parts of the listing for me. And it's also an area that surprisingly so many people still, I just don't think, get right. There's still so much that so many people can do to improve there, and consistently running these tests to find out what the best one is, and then take that one and then think, okay, well, what else can I do now, and you know, keep trying to take it forward. I mean, having that Amazon data, directly seeing exactly what the click-through rates were, exactly what the conversion rates, what the sales were like of the two different ones, of the different compositions, is so important. I mean, been using it for a little while. I didn't have it as one of the kind of newest things out, but it's so important. I think, you know, previously they only had it on a couple of things. I know they've increased the scope of it, that you can test more with different parts of the listing. But I mean, yeah, especially you obviously mentioned the images, it's such a vital piece of information. And for anyone, I would always say, like, that has to be the final thing. If you were going to actually update the listing, whatever data you have, like, if it's not actual Amazon data live in the setting, because we've had examples, you know, where, you know, using colors as an example, where we test all the different colors on PeakFu, right, which are the most popular. And you find that black is the most popular in this example. Over and over again, we tried it in different ways, and it was always black. We launched two colors, one in black, one in silver, and the silver one performed miles better. The reason being is that everyone else was selling black. So when you're actually on Amazon, it's like your black one is the same as everyone else. So even though silver is less popular, if you're the only one doing it, then all of a sudden you're way more popular than spreading your market share with everyone else. So that's just one example of where you do all of these tests and then the result on Amazon is totally different, because the landscape can just be different. And as I say, the people looking at your listing are different. They're coming from a different angle, right? It's actually their money that they're spending. So yeah, it's got to be the last step before anything that you're looking to do. And it's such great information.
Yeah. So for, again, listeners' benefit, if you have to be brand registered, if you are, go to click on brands on your Seller Central navigation. And under brands, you should have an option called manage experiments. And if you've never used it, it's going to be blank, completely a blank page. And just click on the button, create new experiment. When you do that, it's going to ask you, do you want main image? Do you want A-plus content? Do you want title? Do you want bullets? And there's one more thing I forget. But I mean, it's so great. And then you just put your thing. So the way to really use this is, first of all, don't like put something in today and then look at it tomorrow, see what happened. You have to give it enough time and don't make too many changes, like change an image and then give it a couple of weeks, then change the bullets and give it a couple of weeks. And what you're looking at as you make these changes is, because this is an action. Now you want to see the impact, and the impact is your conversion rate at the end of the day, because all these individual pieces are on your product page. So that means you are assuming somebody's going to land on my page. So the success is higher conversion rate. So check it. And that way, you know, you will have a much better idea. And in the meantime, Amazon is going to report between the two variations that you put in, which one got better result. So, right. So, I mean, that's the way I usually tell people how to analyze.
Yeah, no, I mean, 100%. It's such great information. And yeah, anything that you want to test, like I say, it has to be your final step. And then you can use that moving forward.
Yeah. Great. So we covered four, and this is, you know, we've never had the opportunity to cover so many new things all in one episode. So I'm sure that everything we discussed here, anybody listening, you can put it to test right away. Go do it. And by the time this episode airs, it may be already a few months into these things being released. But doesn't matter, you know, these are permanent things that will always pay off if you do them well. So this was great, Tom. So obviously, I hear your accent, your English.
You know, yeah.
We love the accent in America. So tell us a little bit about you. Let's get to know you a little bit beyond just your accent. So where did you grow up?
So I grew up on a small island on the south coast of England called the Isle of Wight.
Well, Isle of Wight, for anybody listening, again, the Isle of Wight is an interesting place. You have a little town called Cowes, right?
Yes.
And also Isle of Wight is known, other than being a really nice, like a resort kind of place, it also has a prison, right?
Yes.
So did you feel like you wanted to break out of it, or that was you enjoyed growing up there?
No, I really enjoyed growing up there. It's definitely a very, as you said, it's quite a resort type place. It's you know, famous, I think, would be maybe a bit of a stretch, but it's a place that a lot of people in the UK go to for holidays because of the beaches that it has. So I grew up, you're basically always within a fairly short walk of the coast and a lot of beaches. And so it was really good. It's a really nice, like, safe place. But definitely you get a lot of people when you get sort of 18 years old that then really want to go and do stuff. There's not an awful lot to do there if you know, you don't want to kind of relax. So yeah, definitely when you get to around that age, it's definitely people wanting to try and look to get away as much as possible to be able to give themselves as many opportunities as possible.
So you got obviously you went the engineering route as opposed to like arts and things like that. So growing up, what was inspiring you to go in that direction?
I was just always what I was good at, I suppose. I was always very good at maths and science at school. I just kind of followed down what I was particularly strong at. I've always been very analytical and asked a lot of questions, way more than I've ever been very artistic. I've never been particularly good at that type of stuff. And so, yeah, really, I was doing that. And when I looked at what I wanted to do at university, I knew I wanted to do something that was like a you know, core subject that would stand you in good stead for whatever I wanted to do. but also something that I was really good at, that I was better than other people at. I thought that would put me in the strongest position, you know, moving forward. Yeah, so that was basically what drove me
there. Did your parents encourage you to pursue that, or did they have other ideas for you?
No, yeah, definitely that. I was always incredibly academic. So I always did, you know, well at school. And so I think going to university was never really even in question. That was always the path that I was going to go down. So yeah, like straight away, that was always the thing. It was, to be honest, never something we really even spoke about. I was always going to do that. I was always very academic, really enjoyed school, and did well at it.
So what I want to know is, you go study, I mean, obviously being an academic person, you go to college and then, you know, you graduate, you get your degree, and then you pursue master's and, you know, you pick chemistry. So you do all that. And then suddenly the next thing is, I'm going to be on Amazon. So it really doesn't. So tell us what caused that switch?
Yeah. So basically, while I was doing my degree, I realized that while I was good at it, I didn't really love it. And there were a lot of people around me, you know, doing my course that just thought it was amazing. And you know, there's a lot of experiments and reports, and they thought it was so cool. And I was like, I'm not that interested, really. So I knew I didn't want to continue on in terms of, you know, being in a lab or anything like that. And then a lot of my friends from there went into various forms of banking and consultancy, actuarial work, you know, things like that. But I never wanted to do something that was just going to be the same. I really wanted to do something that was going to be more varied, more exciting. I felt like I didn't want to get into a career where I felt like I was going to do the same thing from start to kind of finish. Obviously things do change a little bit, but you know, you get quicker at what you do, you get more valuable, but you know, the scope isn't that huge. So I actually had a cousin that got me into it. He had started his own Amazon business, and he'd started to sell for a couple of years beforehand. And then one summer, while I was looking for a job in between years at university, he said, would you want to come and work for me? And I was doing product research for him at the time, which is basically just data mining, you know, getting loads of different idea things that fit criteria using plugins and things like that. We got on really well. I learned a lot then. And so then I basically continued to work with him while I finished my degree. And then so straight away, then when I graduated, I thought, you know, I don't know where this is going to go, but it seems like a great opportunity to do something that was really exciting and growing. And so, yeah, something that I jumped at the chance to do.
I want to repeat something you said for everybody here listening. I think this is so important, and I think you had the courage to do something about it. And most people don't. You said, I was very good at it, but I didn't love it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, in your case, it was a different situation. But there are a lot of people who are good at doing what they are doing, but they don't really enjoy it. But it makes them money.
Yeah.
And it's a very tough situation to be in, right? Because by that time, probably they also have responsibilities, a mortgage and kids and blah, blah. So I just find it very inspirational for someone to say, you know, I'm very good at this, but I don't love it. So I'm going to go do something totally unknown to me. I don't even know if I'm good at it, but I'm going to give it a shot, right? So, I mean, you know, when you're good at something, the likelihood is you're going to be good at several things, but it doesn't matter. It's still an unknown. It's outside the comfort zone. So yeah. To me, I think that's the most, you know, they say there are those pivotal moments in people's lives.
Yeah.
If hearing your story, I'm hearing that that decision, I mean, it may come very easy to you. You may think right now, what is this guy talking about? You know, I decided, but this is not an easy decision. It's a significant decision. But you said, I'm not doing that, even though I'm good at it. I'm going to do something else. And then your cousin, and by the way, if you hadn't thought that way, probably the universe would not have presented your cousin to you either. As an
yeah.
So to me, that's the most valuable thing. So you must thank your cousin every day the way that's turning out. So this is great. So now you are at Branded, and you're running Home and Kitchen.
Yes. Yeah, so with the brands that I worked with my cousin, as you mentioned at the start, over the kind of COVID year, we were able to achieve over 100 million in revenue, and then we were acquired by Branded, and then, you know, basically kept on to continue to run the home and kitchen space, which is where the brands that we had were. And help to kind of build the infrastructure, and yeah, basically, as you mentioned at the start, especially now, you know, really concentrate on building other brands as well and being able to help. So that's really my area.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is for me, the bottom line is, as a young man, you said, I'm gonna do something different. I don't really like it. And now, look, you are doing tremendously, and then you're building stuff. So this is great. Something you should be proud of. I'm not enough. You can't be proud enough for the decision you made and the success. So this was great. So Tom, give us your contact information. How can people reach you?
I think the best place will just be on LinkedIn, Tom Robinson. It's obviously probably a fair few people with that name. As I say, I'm the home and kitchen category manager at Branded. So that would be the best place to find me.
Great. Thank you, Tom. This was an excellent episode, and I'm sure people will appreciate very much. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much.
And this brings us to the end of another episode, and I'll see you on the next one.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. Be sure and subscribe, rate, and review our show. And be sure and share an episode with a friend. And thank you so much for being with us today. We'll see you next week here on Amazon Legends.